Turn there, please. Most of you know that on Sunday nights we've been trying to focus on families and strengthening families. And throughout the United States of America, there is a huge attack on redefining family in a variety of ways and attacking the role of the husband as the leader and the wife as a loving follower and leader of the children. I mean, just on so many levels, the family has been attacked. And so the focus of this little sermon series, which included several sermons from Colossians 3 and then now several from Ephesians 5, the focus of it really is just to strengthen husbands and wives and to strengthen children in the way that they obey their parents. And so hopefully the families of our church have been strengthened as a result, and hopefully that strengthening will continue this evening as we focus on the Word of God and are led by the Spirit of God. Whenever a pastor preaches on marriage, we will focus on husbands primarily this evening. There's always a sense in my heart, anyways, that some people will not find it relevant to their current life stage or situation. I mean, some people are too young to be married. Some people maybe are called to singleness. And it's sometimes sad that people that are sometimes single want to be married, and then sometimes people that are married want to be single. And there's times where my wife has said that to me. She said one time, not that long ago, she said, "I wish the Lord called me to singleness." And I said, "Dear, what a hurtful thing to say. Why would you say that?" And she said, "Because I want the remote." and so I said, "Tough luck, you know. Keep wishing on that one." But anyhow. No, I didn't respond that way, honestly, but I'm about to preach on husband's love, so I did not respond that way, to be clear. Certainly, I was sacrificial and turned it right over, but anyhow, that's a different sermon, but Ephesians 5 is where we are, and yeah, I just want to say the idea of a biblical husband-wife relationship, no matter what stage you're in, what your calling is, what your future is, you should appreciate, even if you're called to singleness, appreciate what is seen in biblical marriage. I mean, a husband who loves his wife and a wife who loves her husband in the way that Ephesians 5 calls us to is a picture of the gospel. And just as the redeemed will adore or appreciate somebody who's being baptized, you know, it's a picture of the gospel, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. It's identification with Christ. You're not the one being baptized, but you're observing somebody. And if you are right with the Lord, it'll often cheer your heart to see the reminder and the identification of the death, burial, and resurrection. So it should when you observe a biblically balanced husband and wife roles. And so hopefully, as you walk through this passage of Scripture with me this evening, your heart will be strengthened in the gospel. And what is pictured here, the calling of a husband to love his wife, is as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. And so you might not be able to make immediate applications in relationship to husband and wife, but you might be able, certainly if you're saved, to just appreciate that Christ loved you. If you're saved, you're a part of the church, and he gave himself for you. So throughout the study this evening, there are applications for all kinds of people. And I hope you will open your heart to what the Lord has for you this evening. Ephesians 5:21 is where we started when we got to Ephesians 5. And we considered this verse 21 as somewhat of a heading, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. And what happens the rest of chapter 5 and into chapter 6, there are categories of people who are to submit to other categories of people. So a little bit of a heading is what verse 21 is. And then the instruction, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands. Now, I gave several Sunday nights to that topic already, wives being submissive. How many of you were here for at least one of those messages, do you recall? Good, lots of you were, so I don't necessarily need to recover it. Now, the first Sunday I was gone after several Sunday nights of wives submit, Brother Kaiser preached, I think. I was in Israel that evening, and my wife and I, you know, it's like, is it an 8-hour difference in Israel or a 10, some drastic span of time difference? And so she was messaging me when I was in the Wi-Fi, we could message, and she said something like, if Brother Jonathan doesn't preach on wives submitting, it just won't feel like a Sunday night at Northstone, because she had just been so used to that. And incidentally, I did get to listen. By the way, Brother Powell preached in my absence. Thank you, Will, for preaching on that Wednesday night. And then Jonathan and I listened to both of those messages, including Brad Phillips' message, who preached for me Sunday morning. But anyhow, Brother Jonathan did happen to mention 1 Peter 3:7, which is the idea of, you know, domestic. Jonathan's point, I think, there was be domestic, you know, the idea of the home again, and the wives being the weaker vessel is 1 Peter. So you worked it in, Jonathan, some kind of way, maybe unintentionally, but it made her feel like a Sunday night at Northstone. So anyhow, I feel like we've covered the idea of wives being submissive relatively comprehensively. And just by way of introduction, before I get into the husband's love aspect, I just want to, because to build the case for why the husbands need to love, we need to be reminded of the Genesis 3 account that tells us that a wife will have kind of a carnal desire to rule over her husband. And godly ladies are trying to fight that carnal desire, and they are endeavoring to be submissive to their husband. And as they struggle with that balance between being the helpmeet you need, fellas, and being a submissive wife, there's a balance there. They need to speak into your life things you need to hear. They have unique gifts and are uniquely called of the Lord to serve your situation. So we need to have a listening ear. At the same time, then we make decisions based on what they say and what we're experiencing, and then they're called to submit. So it is a bit of a balance, but all along the way, they're struggling, sometimes wives are, to find that submissive balance. And even as they pursue that, hopefully all the godly wives under the sound of my voice are pursuing that kind of biblical submission. Even as they struggle to pursue that, you are still loving them all along the way. I mean, when a woman gets out of balance, maybe you would view her as being too motherly or too, we say in a really colloquial way, naggy, too aggressive. She's too helpmeety in that sense. She's constantly trying to help. Or some wives get out of balance with the submission thing where they're just too submissive. I mean, in the sense that they just only do what they're told and they don't do anything on their own, and they're kind of become doormats, and there's no real balance there. And so as a wife tries to find that balance, the instruction is given to men in verse number 25. In spite of the wife's strengths or the wife's weaknesses, husbands, you still love your wives. That's what Ephesians 5:25 says. So for the sake of title this evening, it is just simply husband's love. Husband's love. And I have notated here from this text, I think, five aspects in relationship to what it means to love her correctly or love her biblically. And for some of you men, maybe many of you men, this is a familiar passage, you husbands. And I hope that's true, by the way. I hope this is a familiar passage if you're married, men, and I hope that you go back to this passage on a very regular basis. And so for some of you, I may not say anything that is all that profound, and yet knowing the sinful struggles in your heart and in the heart of your spouse, I know that even if this is familiar, this passage serves as helpful reminders to all the men, no matter how long you've been married. Some of you, maybe 2.5, 3 weeks, and some of you, 50-plus years, 55, 56 years. We've got some veterans of marriage among us. And so hopefully, for the sake of the newlyweds and the sake of the not-as-newlywed, these things will serve as a helpful reminder. Husbands, love. Here is verse number 25. Notice what it says. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. So first of all this evening, loving her biblically means sacrificing for her. That's what it looks like. I did preach Colossians 3, and a similar idea is stated in Colossians 3 about husbands loving. And my wife said to me after that message, we talked a little bit about it on the walk. We often take evening walks around our neighborhood. And she said positive things about the message from Colossians 3. But she said one of the areas, maybe if I revisit this, is to really try to explain what it means for a husband to love. And in all the words I said from the Colossians 3 message, maybe it wasn't as practical as I would have intended. So in a very practical way this evening, I want us to be reminded that in order to love your wife correctly, you are going to be sacrificing for her. That's what verse 25 says, as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. Feels like a tall order, fellas, to love her in the way of the cross. which is what they just sang about. To love her with such sacrifice that you are willing to give of yourself, even unto death. When a husband loves in this way, it is so much easier for a wife to submit in the ways that she is to submit. It is an instruction to love with sacrifice and a much more comprehensive explanation of Christ-like love, specifically love for his church, is given to us in some 13 verses in 1 Corinthians 13. The husband is to love his wife as Christ loved the church. And what did he do? He is the one who perfectly imitates 1 Corinthians 13. Verse number 7 there says, he beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, and endureth all things. It's a sacrificial kind of love. It is, you are inconvenienced at times and you don't even recognize it as an inconvenience, but you will take a step back so that you can make sure that she is convenienced, that she is comfortable. You sacrifice for her, hopefully, in many, many ways. Practically speaking, what does that look like? Well, it's different in every situation. Hopefully you think about, and this should work both ways, husbands and wives, hopefully you are thinking about things your spouse enjoys and ways that you can facilitate those things. One of the things that my wife enjoys more than anything is her daily Diet Coke from the Circle K. Now, it has to be from the Circle K, because at the Circle K, it's 96 cents, okay? It's affordable, and we have the discount plan, where for $5 a month, you get one a day for 30 days. That's a great deal, okay? And it has to be from the Circle K discount, but also Styrofoam cup. She likes the Styrofoam cup. And so, you know, 23 years now we've been married, and so it probably took me 20 to figure out these things. But you know, figuring out ways, and we talked previously about, like, love languages. Chapman's book on love languages is something that could be very helpful. And I think he suggests 5 love languages. And sacrificing enough, showing enough interest in your spouse to say, I want to figure out what my spouse's love language is. And so just doing little things for your spouse. Loving her correctly means, by the way, little things and sometimes very big things. Willing to sacrifice for the sake of the well-being of the one that you love. You know what else a healthy habit is to reread your wedding vows after you've been married for some time. Because it's in those wedding vows, especially if you use traditional church wedding vows, where you have articulated measures of sacrifice. You have not just articulated them before people, but you have promised them to her before the Lord. A healthy discipline is to revisit the old VHS cassette of your wedding day and to hear yourself repeat after the pastor. Loving her in a biblical way means sacrificing for her. Not only that, but secondly, loving her biblically includes setting her apart. It's the idea in verse number 26 that he might sanctify. Now, the illustration here is given between Christ and his church, and the application for the church is that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he may present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot nor wrinkle nor any such thing. So an emphasis I want to make here is that the church is to be set apart from the filth and the decay of this world. I preached about some of that this morning, also from Colossians 3. Christians are called to pursue personal holiness. And so in another sense, though, you make the application between a husband and a wife. Loving her biblically means setting her apart. In other words, she is not just another female in your life. She is the female in your life. Like, she is set apart. There is a sacredness that should exist in your heart in relationship to who she is, a measure of sacredness. And so yes, all along the way, you're going to sacrifice for her, but then also you set her apart, and there should be numerous ways in a 24-hour period that you show her that she is not just another female, but that she is the female in your life. Numerous ways that you dwell with her according to knowledge numerous ways that you give her honor, recognizing that she is the weaker vessel. Amen. Thank you for that. So what are those ways? And again, those ways shape up differently. Several years back here at our church, I've been here just over 6 years now, and I saw one of the men of our church opening the door for his wife, the automobile door. Now, it's one thing to open the door at the grocery store or wherever, some public place, you know, and you would do that maybe for just anybody coming through, a man or a woman. Definitely if you have a sense of chivalrousness to you, you'll open the door for a female. But this individual in our church was opening the door for his wife, and I had seen him do it now several times, and I was under conviction because previous to that, it was, Mrs. Johnson, you're on your own with that door thing, you know. And that particular fella in the church made me feel like, hey, I need to get this together. And ever since then, I have tried to go out of my way to show her that she is precious to me by opening the car door for her. Now, some of you men maybe don't do that, but hopefully that's just one suggestion. But that should be there should be then many other ways that you show your wife she is set apart, she is precious to you. Some random female getting into her car in the mall parking lot, you're not hustling over to open the door for her. I mean, I sure hope not, okay? You might get smacked by your wife, but that might have biblical validity if she smacks you over that. But anyway, that's another sermon too. But yeah, you know, that's my wife, and I don't want her to open that door. I want to get, and I will tell her sometimes if she's two or three steps ahead of me, I'll say, Mrs. Johnson, wait, I'll get the door. And then I take a quick jog, and I get up there, and I get that door. And she will just stand there and wait. And I want her to know that she is precious to me. And I think I've shared this before. One time, I wasn't paying attention at one time not that long ago, and she just kind of stood by the door and waited. And then I realized what I was doing, that I hadn't opened the door like I wanted to. And then she said, I'm precious. And so I was like, yes, you are, dear. Yes, you are. So that I open the door. But there should be things that you do that help her feel set apart. You know, there are occasions when people will open a door specifically for me, specifically because I'm a pastor. And one of those occasions that often exists in my life is at a funeral home. Funeral directors, if I will ride in the hearse, which is not politically correct anymore, now it's called a coach, but whatever, and I will ride up front, and I'll be in the passenger seat, and the funeral director will get the door for the dear reverend. You know, he'll open the door, and then I'll sit. And there is just a sense that if you've had people open the door for you, there is a sense that kind of goes through your brain like, oh, wow, he just showed me respect. There was honor for the office of a pastor. And the feeling that I would get in that moment of kind of appreciation and almost a feeling of awe and a feeling of unworthiness and whatever might go through your brain when somebody does that for you is a healthy thing for a wife to feel at the hand of her husband. It's a healthy thing because it is a stressful thing, husbands, to be married to you. I don't know if you've realized that or not, but none of us men are easy, okay, to deal with, none of us. And so if you can make her feel in some kind of way set apart throughout the day, if you can make her feel precious, that can be a very healthy thing. Good. One of the wives was giving me a thumbs up and a nod. Good. So, yeah, listen, every one of you men, I want you to know this. Every one of you men, whether you realize it or not, and I sure hope you realize it, you married up, okay? Yeah. And I in my hearing not that long ago, within a year or two ago, I heard a fella say the opposite in front of his wife. And I thought, well, that's going to be a rough evening together for the two of them. But you married up. The saying is you outkicked your coverage, you know. I mean, she is, I promise, much prettier than you. And in some cases, our wives are smarter than many of us. And so whatever, you need to love her and cherish her and sacrifice for her and endeavor to do things where she has a sense that she is set apart, okay? Give honor to her as the weaker vessel. That we walk on a regular basis in our neighborhood, as I've mentioned, and occasionally an automobile will be leaving their driveway and heading out of our neighborhood. And we have observed other husband and wife couples do this as well. But I will kind of make sure she has the inside position. I outweigh her by a significant margin. If an automobile hits me, I'm way more likely to withstand the punishment of the derelict driver, okay? Just protecting, providing, setting her apart, all those things. You figure out ways to do that to show your wife love, but that would honor the Lord. All right, the third idea. So not only first I said loving her biblically is sacrificing for her. Secondly, loving her biblically includes setting her apart. But then thirdly, loving her biblically means leading her to purity. Leading her to purity. The idea of holy and without blemish at the end of verse 27 is an emphasis on purity. Your greatest desire for your wife, what is your greatest desire for your wife? You should think about that, husband. Your greatest desire for your wife is that she should be perfectly conformed to the image of Christ. And you have part in seeing her further conformed to the image of Christ because you are charged with leadership responsibility. And so the work, if you will, of the responsibility of leadership is laid at your feet. Love her enough to lead her to purity, to conformity to Christ, to Christ-likeness. Now, I don't need to say this, but I kind of think I need to say this. It's a little bit of an awkward thing to say, but here goes. Some husbands lead their wives in the opposite direction. They have struggles with things that are impure, and then they recruit their wives to be involved in that. And I'm telling you, if you are involved in leading your wife towards impurity instead of purity, you're involved in the act of a foolish man. Your number one priority for her is to lead her towards Christ-likeness, conformity to Christ. You are to protect her, as I've alluded to, in every way that you can think of, and you are to provide for her financially. The Bible says much about that. But then also, you are to, in some way, pastor her. You are to be the pastor of your home. You are to be the voice of holiness and purity and righteousness there in that home. And instead, some men take the tract of, I'm just going to be the voice for laziness and for carnality and for justification. This is my home and this is my castle, and I can say what I want to say and indulge in what I want to indulge in. And woman, you're just going to have to get over it because it's how I am, it's what I am, and I'm going to be these things. Again, this is the mentality of a foolish man. The work, I said, responsibility of leading her to purity, any kind of leadership role is work. Engaged in leading. It's whether you lead the youth at our church or you lead a Sunday school class or you're involved in leadership in a secular venue. I mean, there is a measure of thoughtfulness that is required in order to lead somebody to a specific destination. And with that thoughtfulness comes responsibility. It comes work. You're not just winging it. You're not just giving in to the tendencies of your own flesh. Not just coddling her in her weakness necessarily, but evaluating whatever the concern is and then speaking strength into her life. It's the work of leadership. And often the wife will do that for the husband as well, evaluating what his current issue is and then trying to speak strength into his life. And so husbands, we are responsible to lead, and we should be leading our wives towards purity. Not only these three things, but the fourth thing then is that if we are going to love our wives correctly or biblically, fourthly, that means nourishing and cherishing her. Nourishing and cherishing her. As much as the women's lib movement wants us to think that women can handle all the same pressures that men can handle, the fact is that you really should not expect your wife to do a lot of the things. You know, the saying is the big shoulders and the little shoulders. I mean, some of the things that God designed the big shoulders to handle are things that the little shoulders shouldn't have to handle. And so, men, you should have a sense of cherishing her, nourishing her. What are things that you can do? And that's what's presented to us in verses 28 through 30. What are things that you can do that will foster spiritual growth, nourish her, spiritually speaking, and then show her that you cherish her? Be thoughtful about those kinds of things. Notice what the text says. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself, for no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church, for we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. And so the emphasis there in verse 29 of nourishing and cherishing your own self. You want yourself to be comfortable. You want to take care of yourself. Hopefully, if you have a healthy heart, a healthy mind, a healthy body, you're a healthy, relatively, spiritually speaking, healthy individual. You want to be nourished in the things of God. Well, so much the more you should want that for your spouse. Somebody that does hate themselves is somebody that is sick mentally. Somebody that inflicts pain on themselves is somebody that is, you know, off their rocker, so to speak. I mean, the point that Paul is making, men love themselves, men try to take care of themselves in general. We try to avoid pain ourselves. And so the idea is then, the picture then is to nourish and cherish her, try to make her comfortable, try to have her best interests at heart, just like you're always vying for your best interest. That's the point. The fifth idea, and finally this evening, the fifth idea, loving her biblically means uniting with her, a union. And that's what's presented in 31 through 33. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, every one of you in particular, so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. So notice this idea of unity, specifically in verse number 31. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother. And he's quoting the Old Testament here. A man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is the only time that I know of when one plus one equals one. The two become one flesh. It's a picture of unity. Loving her correctly means unifying with her. And unfortunately, so often marriages are not appropriate pictures of the gospel, and instead they are pictures of just self-willed, this idea of fierce individualism and feuding and fighting. A very important marriage passage to which I've alluded previously is Philippians 2. And in Philippians 2, it's 1 through 4. It's not specifically a marriage passage, but it is a relational passage specifically. And it's the idea of esteeming others better than yourselves. It's the idea of saying, yeah, for the sake of unity, I'm going to prefer one another. Loving her biblically means all of these things. It means sacrificing for her. Loving her biblically means setting her apart, giving honor unto her as the weaker vessel. It means leading her to purity. It means nourishing and cherishing her. And it means having a sense of unity with her, not disunity, not discord. Loving, both pursuing Christ's likeness together. Philippians 1:27, striving together for the faith of the gospel. As I said by way of introduction, and I'll close with similar thoughts about, figuring out the way your spouse is wired, figuring out love languages like Chapman would suggest. And he does have five love languages. And again, I commend that to your consideration. I heard somebody recently articulate things that would help you foster love in your marriage in a little bit different way than Chapman would articulate them. And it's very practical. How do you love your wife, fellas? Well, they all start with the letter T. Here's four of them. The first one you might consider is time. In certain situations, we give so much time to your job, maybe so much time to your kids, maybe so much time to your hobbies. But if you love her, give her time. Maybe another idea is this idea of touch. You know, after you've been married a long time, when you hold your spouse's hand, it doesn't feel like it did when you were first married. It sure doesn't feel like it felt when you were dating, right? Like, my wife never noticed that I sweat when we were dating, okay? My little sweaty hand, now she's like, when is the last time you washed your hand, you know? I mean, it's a totally different dynamic 23 years in, you know? It sure is. And some of those things change. But loving them enough to give them time, loving them enough to maybe respond to a love language of affection and touching them in an affectionate way that is that doesn't give them any inclination of a self-serving agenda, but just honest, selfless affection. What about the third T, which is talk? And sometimes when you talk to your spouse, it's not as much about you actually articulating yourself as it is you just listening to them articulate themselves. Husband's love, time, and affectionate touch, and a talk kind of conversation. Sometimes we'll talk about everything to everybody else, but not to the one we've pledged to love the most. And the fourth idea this one individual suggests is travel. Sometimes your spouse might want to go places and have adventures with you. And maybe finances are tight for you, but you deliberately set aside money so that you can create memories together and go and enjoy one another's company in travel. And as I got to thinking about these four ideas, I realized that if you're not doing the first three, you know, spending time and then affectionately touching and then talking, she ain't going to want to do the fourth one. She's not going to want to travel with you, okay? So all of these kind of things go hand in hand, okay? But this is what it looks like on a practical level for husbands to love, all right? Would you pray with me, please, over this?